Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
You know, Tara, when God's people open their lives and homes to children in need and bring them into their families, it's truly one of the clearest pictures of the gospel. And today we're going to talk with a family who has done just that. What a privilege today to be joined by Joy and George Ross.
Well, George and Joy, we are really excited to have you. So, George, you are a North American Mission Board Send missionary to New Orleans, Louisiana. That's a mouthful. So can you tell us a little bit about what that means?
Yes, I've been here for over 3 years. We're starting our fourth year, actually, here in New Orleans. Part of my job is to help mobilize churches to partner in the city to plant churches. So we're working to that end to see a church planting movement happen here in New Orleans. My wife and I also are very involved in coaching the church planters and ministering to their spouse. So planter support and planter health, especially with the family, is a big part of our ministry as well.
That's amazing. And I noticed on your bio that we have is that you have a family motto that we are a kingdom family. And you're definitely doing that in your work as send missionaries. And you're doing that in a bigger sense for your own family through jumping into the foster care arena not that long ago, I guess. How long has it been?
Well, we really prayed about joining foster care, being a foster care parent, back when we lived and pastored in Mississippi, and we went through all the training. So that was almost 5 years ago. And
When
we moved to New Orleans, we had to redo all of that. It didn't transfer.
Oh.
So we redid certification in New Orleans and have been fostering for the past 2.5 years. 2 years, excuse me.
So, Joy, how did you know where to begin in this new city to jump into foster care? Like, what did you do? Did you get help or?
Yes, we actually are so blessed here by an organization, a nonprofit organization out of First Baptist New Orleans called Crossroads NOLA, and they actually can help point you in the right direction. And they, I think, now are even doing some of the training. But they have a foster care social worker who is actually came to our house and did all of our home study for us. It was incredible. So we are blessed here in New Orleans by that nonprofit.
That is amazing to have that resource. I mean, what a blessing.
Yes.
So when you brought the social worker into your home, you kind of had a full nest already, right?
I do. I have 4 biological children. Isaac, who's 12, Hannah Ruth is 10, Abigail is 9, and Jeremiah is 7. So yes, ma'am, we have our hands full.
Wow, you really do. You really do. And so what did they think about all this?
They were excited. You know, George does. We do have a family motto about being a kingdom family. And that was one of our goals for the year, was to get certified. And so they were excited about the possibilities of having babies and younger kids to love on in our house. So
when you received a phone call for your first placement, tell me about that.
Well, we were actually, it was the day after we were certified officially.
Of course it was.
So it was a little overwhelming, but we had really talked about, you know, what we could do and what we couldn't do. And when they gave us the phone call, it was, sometimes you get no information, but at that specific call, they did have information on this child, and the child had some behavior issues. He had some trauma in his life, and they were really wanting a home that did not have many children. But, you know, they were just desperate, as many times they are. And I did not have any peace about that, because I knew that that child probably needed a lot of attention. And if they knew that on the front end, I knew that, you know, having 4 children already, I just did not have a peace. And so I talked to George and kind of explained the situation, and he was okay with me saying no especially since we were given all that information on the front end. And so we were sad, and I felt, you know, a little bit like we had failed, but I knew that, you know, probably we weren't the fit for that child since we already had four children.
Absolutely. And so I hear you saying, George and Joy, that you just need wisdom from the Lord in these placements.
Yes.
Absolutely, definitely. You do. Absolutely.
So what does that look like, George, for you when you see that Joy did not have a peace about, since she's, you know, in the home 24/7, and since she just didn't have a peace about bringing that child into the home? Was that hard for you?
Yeah, you have to be on the same page. And one of the commitments we had made, just praying through the process, is that we knew the Lord would give us a peace. And part of that peace would be we'd be in agreement.
Yes,
we'd be
I
in
agree.
Unity where mm-hmm. we would be. So I knew as we prayed through that and just listening to Joy as we discussed that, that the season of life we were in at that moment, that would have been too difficult for us at that moment. So even though you do have your emotions pulling at you, we felt like it wasn't the wisest decision for us at the time.
I think that's probably the hardest part for me as a wife, is being able to balance those emotions of it. And as we, you know, as wives, as we come up underneath the leadership of our husbands, to be able to lean in, and for Joy to be able to lean into you and say, you know, I need you to help me be able to take all this information in and look and see what's the very best for our family. So it's very wise that you all have those discussions beforehand as you're really seeking the Lord and allowing each other to balance one another out.
And thinking about your other four children.
Yes.
Absolutely.
There will always be a phone call.
Always. Absolutely.
Always, yeah. But as first-time foster parents, you're not really sure of that. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big step of trust, knowing that, what if I say no and they don't call me back? And mm-hmm. so I know that fear is not from the Lord. And so you have to just trust the wisdom of your spouse and what's best for your family. And you have to know that on the front end, because when they call, your emotions are just immediately drug into it.
What do you think the biggest fear, George, in the church is about beginning to open wide their tent and take in foster children in their home?
I think there's a couple of things. One is awareness. Mm. And I do think awareness is getting much better. When I grew up, I did not see it modeled at church at all.
Nor did I. Neither.
As Joy's testimony as well, it was a good friend on staff at the church that I pastored. They started fostering, and they actually led our church to almost create a culture of foster care and adoption. And
wow. It
was through that we really got a heartbeat for that. So one is awareness. You just have to cultivate awareness of the need. Even in New Orleans, at any given time, there's 400 children in need of foster care here in the city.
Wow.
So those numbers are pretty significant. So awareness is one. And then to remove fear. If you had asked Joy and I 3 months ago, should you foster? We were in a hard time in our foster journey. And even though I would have given you a good answer to do it, I would have been very, very honest. And I still am today, very honest.
It's
hard through the process. And I think sometimes the fear of the process, the fear of the unknown, and maybe even the fear of stories they've heard from other people hinder them from embracing it fully. So, you know, just trying to navigate through that, even as Joy and I have talked, we're on the other end of it. And we want to be advocates for foster care, advocates in the sense, everybody might not be a foster care parent, but you can help out in foster care, whether it being a respite worker, helping with meals, loving on families that are doing it. I do think there's a place for everyone to participate, even if you don't actually have kids in your home. So, again, cultivating awareness, helping people remove the fear from doing it, and giving them opportunities to really connect through different avenues of foster care.
That's a great point. And I think Kevin and I saw, and you know, when he was a senior pastor, that when leadership did it, it just kind of made people feel more comfortable to join in to that calling.
Absolutely. I agree with that so much.
And
absolutely.
When you create, when a culture of foster care and adoption and caring for the orphan in our country, in a sense, and anywhere else, I feel like when people rise up to do that and you get the support that you need, even though it's really messy as far as having, you know, traumatized children in your home, if you have outside support, that even on those hard days, you know that you're going to have the body of believers that are going to surround you.
Yes, I feel like if we hadn't had our body of believers, there were several times that we wanted to give up.
Right.
The body came in and did some amazing things. One time, this group of five ladies came in and cleaned my entire house.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you could walk in and you could smell the Lysol and the pine salt. And it was like, to a mama, it was the best smell in the world.
It's my love language, I will tell you.
Yes, yes. And they didn't tell me. So, like, for 0.5 seconds, I was a little upset because they saw all my junk. But after that 5 seconds, I was like, oh, praise you, Father.
Yes.
I was so excited and felt like I could make it. But not only did they clean, they enlisted the help of the church, and I had at least 15 meals in my freezer.
Wow.
That were frozen and just ready. And that gave us just this sense of, okay, we can do this, you know, even in this hardship, even in the unknown, we can do this. And I really credit our body at that time for helping us, you know.
So, George, if I'm correct, at one point you had an older sibling in your home around Easter time. Tell us about that.
We originally had all three siblings, and the sister was a half-sister. She was older. She was a teenager. She was in our home, and as they were trying to navigate where she would be, she was with us for a little over a week, and she came in the week before Easter. So what we do as a family, just every year, we go through the story of Christ coming to Jerusalem. We go through the Passion Week, and that is our family worship for that week. We lead up to Good Friday, we lead up to Saturday, and then the resurrection on Sunday. And she's from New Orleans. She's here, you know, a cultural Southern city, which is often very different from other cultural Southern cities. And you would think that she would have heard the gospel and she would have heard the story of Jesus. But what we found out through the course of the week is she participated with us in family worship, and we were just going through the life of Christ and leading up to the cross and resurrection. She had never heard that story before.
Wow.
And Easter to her was, it was a family gathering where people got together, but it had nothing to do with the resurrection of Christ. And she told us she had never heard that story before. She actually woke up on Saturday morning. I cooked pancakes on Saturday. And she woke up on Saturday morning because we had made a big deal about Good Friday. We talked about the cross, Jesus going to the tomb the day before. And she woke up telling everybody, happy Easter or happy resurrection. And I said, well, no, not today. Tomorrow is the resurrection.
Wow.
So we had a humbling time and a great time, you know, just reflecting on the fact that she was with us. She heard the gospel clearly, but also just challenged by the fact that she lives here in a city in the South and she had never heard that story by her own admission.
That was a providential placement.
To follow up with her as she still connected with us in a relationship right now. So we're praying God would continue to use that in our heart and our life.
Wow, that's an incredible story of God's providence. So Joy, on another note, how do you and George maintain the health of your family while fostering?
Right. George has a great question that he asks me sometimes, and he will, you know, we ask each other, are you thriving or are you just surviving? Because it says a lot, you know. And it's not all, you know, rainbows and lollipops, but, you know, there's times when we are just holding on and we're just surviving. And then there are times that we are thriving. And then there's reasons sometimes why we're not thriving. You know, are you not meeting with the Lord? Are you not having time to take care of your body? You know, are we been so busy that we're just eating McDonald's every day? You know, there are definitely reasons that add to the, you know, why we aren't thriving. So we want to shoot for thriving. And, you know, if we're just surviving, we need to let people know, you know, so.
Wow, that is fantastic. So we also want to know how that first, when you get the call and you took the placement, I know you took a placement for three children, and the oldest sibling was placed in another home, but you were left with two little children. And so how does that look like, say, the first couple of days? How did life change, and what are some of the things you learned?
We definitely learned to be flexible. You forget, you know, once you're out of that bottle stage and the no diapers, you just kind of block it out, I think. You know,
oh, wow.
Like, okay, we're past that.
Yeah.
Know? So we had to remember what it was like to do bottles and to do two in diapers. And,
oh, goodness.
You know,
yeah.
we just kind of gave each other, everybody was, you know, giving each other, you know, grace because they were learning how to navigate. Okay, mom's got two babies in her lap, you know, so how does she do dinner? You know, because I mean, they didn't know me. And so they were scared sometimes. They had never been around a man from what mm-hmm. we understand. So, you know, George would be holding one and she would be crying.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is fun. This is fun. you know, so, and of course she loves George now. She's her, George's girl. That's what she says. But, you know, at first that was so new to her. So, and then they would, you know, the food they would try to eat and some would get choked because they were trying to eat so fast. Mm-hmm. So some of those stories that you hear in training are so true. And so eyes are just open to this world that you've heard of, but you didn't really understand. And so it was very eye-opening.
And there are things that are happening to children in your city. That's what's so hard to think about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely. So how do you offer security to these children when you first get them in your home? Like, what are some things that you all did so they would know you are safe and it's going to be okay?
Well, one of the things that I thought Joy just did a great job, and I just modeled after her, just words of affirmation. You know, whether it's putting them to bed at night, you know, I just remember Joy doing this, and we still do this together, saying, hey, we love you,
yeah,
and you're safe.
Right.
And we're going to take care of you. Mm. And just simple things like that over and over again were words that I do believe have great meaning. And I think they've had great meaning in their life because you can sense and you can see that there is fear. And over the course of 2 years, seeing where they've come from having no security to having a very high level of security and just the words of affirmation and that security of I love you, you're safe, and we're going to take care of you. And mm-hmm. seeing the fruit of that over the course of 2 years of where they were being very fearful to where they are right now, just being incredibly secure and seeing that evidence out in their attitudes, their actions and their lifestyle.
Well, we are so grateful, you guys, to get your cars and get on your cell phones and spend
yes.
time with us today. Just if there's anything else you want to add or is there something else you'd like to share?
Yeah, I would. Just one thing, you know, a couple of cautions and just thoughts.
There you go.
As we were in the foster care journey, we started out with the real desire for reconciliation and restoration, and you should be. That should be your heart as you head into foster care and praying for the family and praying for God to do a great work in their life. It was probably after a year of fostering that we recognized, especially after the state asked us if we wanted to go through with adoption. That we knew that would be very, very probable. But during that time, as you enter into a foster to adopt, especially in the United States, just be prepared for that journey. I don't think we were very prepared for all the things that would happen and as long as it would take. You just want to be prepared for that. We knew we wanted to adopt it sometime, and we knew we wanted to adopt these children, but you also have to work within the system that you mm-hmm. have. So just navigating that, I would encourage people to have wisdom in that. You are balancing how do you pray earnestly and sincerely for restoration and reconciliation in the family that you're trying to help, and you want that. But then the reality of if that's not going to happen, how do you work within the system to adopt? And it is a process. It is a journey. And God used it to sanctify us greatly during that. So to be aware of that and to work through the means that God has given for that. And the other thing would be just the caution for husbands with wives. I think there's something that's just a God-given characteristic about motherhood. And not that I did not emotionally bond with the children immediately. I did. But there's something different about how a woman bonds with children.
Oh, absolutely.
And I
yeah.
believe it is something that's just God-given. And the wisdom that husbands would have to know that and to help their wife navigate through that. Because as a foster system is telling you, they want you to love the children like they're your own, and you should, and that's a huge part of that. But they want you to be ready for reconciliation and restoration as they go back. And that is such a hard balance to
oh,
strike
wow.
with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredibly, incredibly difficult to really understand what that is. And I think men would be wise to recognize that God-given trait and characteristic a mother has to so bond with children. When we were just at a season of thinking, you know, are we going to be able to keep these children or not? And then the ups and downs of our foster care journey, where it, sometimes it looked incredibly promising, and then the other times it would look incredibly like it was not going to happen. And just the roller coaster of that was an emotional nightmare for Joy, especially for me, but for Joy especially. And just to be aware of that, what's going on internally, and how do you process that? How do you pray through that? How do you have friends come alongside you during that? And the last thing I would say is this: during our journey, I can remember we'd been in about 3 months. You asked earlier what was the feelings you had in the first month. I can't tell you the first month, but I can tell you about the third month. I journaled in my journal, and I hadn't journaled a statement like this in years. And what I journaled was, God, if you do not give me the grace to make it, I will not be able to make it.
Wow.
And it was just the newness. It was the new schedules. It was two babies in diapers and bottles. It was a new life, literally. We just got thrown a new life. And there was such dependency. There had to be such dependency on the Lord during that time.
It's good for foster families to hear that the feelings that they are having are normal feelings, and that they shouldn't feel guilty yes. about those feelings. And I think, too, it's a really great word from you to men, in that we have dear friends who struggle through some issues with their adoption. And at one point, the husband said to their social worker, I'm going to need to field all the phone calls for a while, because my wife needs a break from hearing all of the details. So I'm going to need you to take those. I'm going to need to take those phone calls. And then, you know, allowing himself to then be able to disseminate the information that was really Absolutely. Necessary for her to know, but just to protect her heart, because she was weary and overly emotional at times, because that's the way we girls roll.
She was tired.
She was exhausted. Yeah. And so for him to be able to do that was just, it was really neat to watch from the outside in. David has done that for me over the years, but to be able to watch him lead his family well, as you're talking about helping Joy work through some of that stuff, is so, so important.
Absolutely. Amen. And we had to make a decision about going to the court cases. There was a time where it just wasn't beneficial for Joy to be
right.
there. And having to navigate through that and to have those discussions with the foster care workers and the people that were involved, just to communicate that, was huge
right.
for her health.
Mm-hmm. Well, George, one of the things that we would like to let the listeners know is a little bit about, just for your family in general, for North American Mission Board missionaries, how they are affected by the Annie Armstrong Easter offering. So could you just explain that a little bit to the listeners?
Absolutely. The Annie Armstrong Easter offering is the support mechanism for our missionaries and church planters. And as churches faithfully give to that, we're able to see the fruit of that through having missionaries in some of the most unchurched, lost cities in America. So as churches participate and they give to that, they're really having an opportunity to engage lostness and to push back lostness by having some incredible guys involved in church planting in these cities. So I'm so grateful for that. We've been able to see over 27 churches planted in the last 3 years.
Oh,
that's
wow.
awesome.
Seen over 300 baptisms
wow.
Here in the city. And part of the Annie Armstrong Easter offering enables us to do that in such a way where, if you think of the SEND initiative for the 32 cities we have here in North America and the incredible lostness that exists in all of those cities, participating in the offering allows us to have an incredible missional footprint that we believe, you know, as we reach the cities, we're going to see a change in our culture. And I firmly believe that. And the Annie Armstrong Easter offering is making that possible in a way that has been unprecedented for us as Southern Baptists.
It's a beautiful way to get little children all the way through senior adults involved to say, maybe the yeah. Lord hasn't called me to a place like New Orleans, but you're not just supporting the George Ross SEND missionary and the church planters of New Orleans. You are supporting an entire, the Ross family, the family who says we're a kingdom family. And not only are we going to work to church plant and push back lostness, but as a family, we're going to engage our neighbors and our culture in the city in which we live for gospel purposes. So little ones collecting change all the way to Everyone who can give to the Annie Armstrong Easter Offering is benefiting these very lost areas in the world through families like George and Joy Ross. And we are so grateful. You can find George's information and his website at georgeross.net to learn more about their family and the things that they do. They speak and lead conferences on parenting, marriage, and living a gospel-centered life. And listen, if I was in New Orleans, I'd come to one of those seminars.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Tara and I are loading up and headed over.
Absolutely. Oh, we'd love to have you come anytime.
Well, it's been a blessing to talk to you. We are super grateful for your family, and we look forward to hearing and celebrating the adoption of your little ones and making your family of eight an official family of eight. So yay. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home. This is a resource of the North American Mission Board. We've been talking with Joy and George Ross today, who serve with the North American Mission Board in New Orleans. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit nam.net/sinrelief.